Recording in progress.
Michael Gerber, CEO, joined the meeting from Washington, D.C. while attending the NARA conference. He is learning more about the conversations related to mixed-status families. There are also discussions about time limits and work requirements. After 8 months, we're excited to welcome our new commissioner, Barbara Boeta. Austin Pathways updates. Liliana Viega, Senior Director of Community Development, very proud to announce Anita Tabai and Catherine Garcia Gonzalez, both residents at Booker T. Washington, received the 2026 Texas Narrow Scholarship. Jana Espinosa, Workforce Development and Digital Inclusion Managers. GED courses at Chalmers and Georgia Manor are open for registration and enrollment. Goodwill reported that two Haka residents are completed their resume training and a workplace for full-time jobs. ACC interns will be hosting office hours at Goodrich and on March 23rd to train residents to transition to Rent Cafe and online payments. Donna McGreen, youth and FSS manager. The Austin Pathways Resident Scholarship deadline is on March 20th. If you need assistance with essay portion, please reach out to your FSS coach. Boys and girls clubs and communities and school staffs are also assisting students complete their application. For Amalie, bringing health home manager, diabetes education, healthy relationships, and Austin Public Health nutrition classes are available at several properties. Community health workers are distributing flyers this week. Please register or call the Haka residence and the client support center if you want to sign up. Daniel Ruiz, home ownership manager. Financial literacy classes began March 24th. This quarter will focus on credit and debit management. The 12 Haka families who will be living at the Prospect Heights at Rosewood are all in the process of finalizing their loans process. They are very excited to receive the keys to the brand new homes. The meeting was adjourned. Kendra Esther, president of Coronado, made a motion to adjourn the meeting. Thelma Pennell, president of North Loop, seconded the motion. The meeting was adjourned at 11:41 a.m. Thank you.
Lupe, while you're here, yesterday we had an opportunity to be at Santa Rita Courts. Would you mind sharing with the board what took place yesterday?
At Santa Rita, it was a demolition, and it was excited.
A little emotional.
Yeah, it was emotional, but it's nice to see it go down because it's going to be nice to see it come back up. Mm-hmm. And so it was very, very, when they did the first, bulldozer, they hit that wall, and it was like, yeah. The whole windows came down, the ceiling came, the roof came down. It was, I can say it was awesome, but at the same time, you know, I was very happy to be able to be part of it and to see it go down.
We did do a video. Ken was out there, and a couple of other folks, a bunch of us were out there, and we were out there for about a half hour and watched the first building, which is closest to the church, mm-hmm. which is where the school will be, where the new mainstream schools will be. But it was hard. It's, you know, a lot of life happened in those units. And well, right after this, want to go drive over?
That's
yes, and we'll. Let's see if we get the video before you all leave today.
Oh,
yeah, we can show you that. Yeah, but it was pretty neat.
Yeah, it was. It was very neat. It was super cold though.
Mm-hmm. And windy.
Windy.
Yeah. Windy.
Yeah.
And I have two more questions for Lupe. One
sure.
is, could you share with the board how things are coming together for the Women's Mind at Ease Conference coming up?
Yeah, it's coming up on April 17th, and I'm going to be holding that at Brooks Elementary School this year. I'm focusing more on the IMOMs that have completed some goals that they've set for the year. And We're basically going to have a lot of resources for them. We're going to have tables, you know, set up and all that. And we'll, of course, we have some speakers, and Mr. Gerber will be doing the welcoming at the conference. Everything set up. I didn't do it as big as I usually do it because of my condition, but I didn't want to stop, not have anything, because my main goal is the IMOMs. Mm-hmm. And so I decided I would still do it, but not as big as I usually do. And this is my 5-year anniversary with IMOMs, y'all. Yeah.
That's huge. Yeah. And during the pandemic. Lupe, obviously, we're also concerned. You know, Rosewood is going to fully be opened, you know, May 1st, which we're really excited mm-hmm. about. But how are residents from Santa Rita and other how are things coming? Because you're, you know, some of your fellow residents are also living in a very active construction site.
Right.
Can you share?
It's good. I mean, you know, I like it. See, the part that my apartment. It's like faces the whole construction site. So you're here by 6 o'clock in the morning, the breaking of the cement and all that. But otherwise, it is looking nice. It's going to be very, very pretty. I mean, I go to the patio and I see the guys out there doing, sidewalks and all that, and they look at me and I said, hey, what's that for? and what are y'all going to put in there? And he goes, oh, these are flower beds. And I said, oh, okay. So, and then the office way up in the front by, what is that, Rosewood Avenue? The man that I was talking to said that's going to be ready by the 24th of this month. He goes, and you can walk over there and go look at it. I said, okay.
That's great.
But it's very nice. The historical part, I'm calling the historical part, right? Right now they were out there putting the AC units this morning early. The grass is down. It's green. It's really, really nice, y'all. The doors are up. It's just coming so nice. Yeah, like I'm envious.
We're excited about getting it open. That's great. One last thing I mentioned mm-hmm. is it was reported out last time that, you know, we were concerned always to make sure the kids are in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know we did a lot of work with the schools and making clear to neighbors, kids who are of school age are expected to be attending school. And so I know, delivered that message loud and clear. That came up, I think, when you were last year. So.
Yeah. That was taken care of. The bus does come for the kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They come. It was a little confusion, I guess, there at first to see who was qualified for the bus and who wasn't qualified. And I thought that was kind of like, okay, but what do you mean? Because I went to the school with one of the residents, and he doesn't qualify, but... I said, but what do you mean about qualifying for a bus? Because consideration, when it's raining and residents don't have a car, the kids don't go to school. And I said, so at the end of the day or the end of the year, you're going to say, well, he missed so many days, but you have to realize that you did not provide the student transportation. And so now everybody gets to ride the bus.
Excellent.
So I wanted to add, I did have a conversation with AISD, and we gave them a list of the students that mm-hmm. were affected by it, so we made sure that from the top they were able to provide the transportation. So right now I have confirmation that every mm-hmm. child that's at Rosewood does have transportation to their appropriate schools, whether from K through 12, mm-hmm. Both elementary, middle, and high school.
Mr. Gerber, a couple of things. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I think she's doing pretty well, it seems. We missed you.
Thank you.
Going back to the citywide advisory meetings, do we have representation at those meetings from each of our properties? I mean, is everybody pretty
yes.
good about coming to that?
Yeah, just about. We've had we have quite a few this coming citywide board meeting. There was a lot of them online. So that I wanted to see more, but I guess right now it was guessed, and I think there was like, if I'm not mistaken, you can correct me in this. There was about 15 properties.
15.
Uh huh.
Okay.
So the way that the citywide works, that is online, and every single community room at each property will host that meeting that day. So every second Tuesday of the month at 10:30, all of the community rooms will go live, and mm-hmm. They have one screen, but then we can see how many people are attending. So mm-hmm. I would say, yes, 15 out of the 18 legacy public housing properties are represented.
Okay. And that's the option, is to do it virtually?
Yes.
Can they do it in person?
They can come here, but that's been a hardship because of the transportation piece. It's very difficult to bring all 18 properties here at the Cypress cafeteria area for an hour and a half meeting. And sometimes there are mobility issues as well
right. That
makes it difficult. But, yeah, we can have it in person, but the preference is for their neighbors to be at the same room in their community room to log into that meeting.
Have we had better attendance now that they can do that virtually?
Yes,
have
absolutely.
They always been able to do it virtually?
No.
Or not always, but I think over the pandemic, mm-hmm.
yes.
we went virtual, mm-hmm. and we've maintained that.
Yes.
Okay.
Approach.
Okay. Thank you.
But it's neat to see a room full of people at the, you'll see, 5-7 people at mm-hmm. Georgian or mm-hmm. another property, neighbors coming together.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of mobility challenges. We did do a meeting last year, and we need to do another meeting this year that the chairman and I did, talking about safety and programming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we hosted a breakfast mm-hmm. for resident leaders. We might be due to.
I think that's is due.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So right now, I'm doing Santa Rita and Rosewood Resident Council together. Mm-hmm. So nobody gets left out.
Thanks for stepping up and helping out.
Okay.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, we'll continue down on the HACA agenda.
Sure.
Item number one is the consent agenda, presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding the approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on February 19th, 2026. Is there a motion to approve?
I move.
Duncan Hall moves.
Second.
Apostola seconds. Is there any further discussion? None. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. Sylvia, you want to take over for 2 and 3? And Lauren's going to, I think, come up as well.
Yeah, she's going to take on 3. So item number, sorry.
Item number 2 is presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution 2940, election of new officers for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. At this time, current officers are for chairperson is Chairman Carl Ritchie. Vice chair is Dr. Tyra Duncan Hall. And second vice chair is Mary Apostolo. So at this time, it's time for a new term beginning May 1st of 2026. And these are due to the terms expiring at the end of April. So I will turn it over to the chair to entertain some possible names.
And I might note, Mr. Chairman, staff has provided a suggested list just based mm-hmm. off of what we have heard from board members. This is exclusively the board member's prerogative, and so on who serves in what role. So we'll defer to you, but this is based off what we were hearing. And so you have a roster as it currently is in your board book. And then the one that's in yellow is the one that is suggesting names. I would also make note that the reason we have, as we go through all these different board agendas, these were where the yellow is and the green is and the purple is, it really reflects a body of work. So all the items under yellow really feed into AAHC as subsidiary organizations of AAHC, which is a subsidiary, of course, of HACA. Blueprint is a subsidiary, really, of SHCC, and so that's really one body of work. which feeds into HACA. So that's why they're grouped the way they are with the same board structure.
So,
if you'd like to recommend this slate of.
So the chair would entertain a motion for the approval of the slate for the HACA board, which is in blue on this.
Correct.
So move.
So motion made. Second. Is there any discussion? None. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. The motion carries. Do you want to run through this all at one time? Or do you want to go open up each?
We'll have to open up each because we're making bylaw changes to each as well.
Okay.
And just to be clear, what the board has just approved is Carl Ritchie as chair, Duncan Hall as vice chair, Apostolo as second vice chair, Carrington as a commissioner, and Barbara Goyette as a commissioner as well. So that's what was just been approved. Congratulations or sympathies, depending on how you look at it.
All right, and then moving on to item number three, which is regarding the approval of revisions to the authority bylaws. We did work with our outside general counsel, Lauren Aldridge, and her team to do a thorough review of not only the housing authority bylaws, but our subsidiary bylaws. But for purposes of this agenda item, we're focusing on the housing authority bylaws. It really, I think, boils down to two main themes that we wanted to ensure were aligned. So, Lauren, if you wanted to maybe provide a little bit more background on what those two items are.
Sure. So, thank you, Commissioners. Lauren Aldridge. I'm the outside general counsel, and I have worked closely with Sylvia and Mike and the staff here to do a comprehensive audit of the bylaws to ensure a couple of goals. One, that everything is kind of consistent across, you know, both HACA's bylaws as well as all of the subsidiaries' terms, the usage of things, how officers are appointed, all of that, making sure that there's a consistent alignment with the goals so that there's no discrepancies as well as no conflicts that may call into question any of the actions that the board takes. The other main component of the bylaw revisions and amendments has to do with the upcoming name change. So we went through and did a kind of line-by-line analysis of where all of the mentions of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin needed to be replaced with the Austin Housing Authority name. So with these, with this audit and these proposed edits, we believe that all of the bylaws for both HACA and the subsidiaries, which we can discuss on a case-by-case basis if you have questions, are consistent and aligned with where we're going and making sure that we maintain the integrity of the agency that we have been so successful in doing. So that's what the goals were, and I'm confident that we accomplished that, and I truly appreciate Solia, Nydia, and Mike's guidance on helping me get there because it was a beast of a project, I think. But we got it done.
Good. Commissioner, I may just note, I had an opportunity to visit with Commissioner Duncan Hall last evening, and the one thing that she noted correctly is that it indicates that, you know, we're electing in some cases on some of these board bylaws. It does state that the person will hold a position for 2 years or until their successors are elected or qualified. So, in effect, our practice has been at each annual meeting to elect their successors. But in some positions, you are able to hold them for up to 2 years. We'll probably make some additional clarifications to the bylaws you'll probably see that again at the next annual meeting, just as we keep, you know, improving it and clarifying. But we're aware of that point and just want to make sure we highlighted that there's no reason from a lawyer's perspective you see why we can't proceed.
No, there's not. Regarding the terms, there's a few of the entities that have 2-year terms. The other ones are, they just say at the pleasure of the board. So there's really no restriction there. They can be two-year terms. We are going to work to bring those maybe into more, you know, consistency, but there's nothing that would affect the amendments that are before you today regarding the naming and the operational consistency.
Thank you.
So with that, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the proposed changes to the bylaws.
I so move.
There's a motion made, and there's a second.
Second. Dr. Malmuz and Carrington, seconds.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
So we want to be number three.
Sure. On to item number four. Which is a presentation, discussion, possible action regarding Resolution 2942, approval of revision to the HACA personnel policy. This one, in a nutshell, commissioners, has it's something that we've been hearing from employees wanting to have a little bit more flexibility with the rollover of annual leave at the end of each fiscal year. As the current policy states, there is a cap of 240 hours that can be rolled into the next fiscal year. There's also a cap at payout upon separation of employment. And, you know, we encounter usually around this time of year, there's a scramble for some of our employees to try to get their balance down to 240 hours. So sometimes there's a disruption to, you know, projects, coverage at our properties. And so by removing that cap at the end of each fiscal year, that allows for more operational consistency and flexibility, and it allows our employees to be able to maybe more properly plan out their time off. So this is simply removing the cap at the rollover. But it does keep in place all of the other policy restrictions in terms of upon separation of employment, it will still be capped at the 240. The accrual rates, all of that remains the same. And our Vice President of Human Development and Professional Development and Human Capital is here, Gloria Morgan, if there are any additional questions that you may have.
Gloria. Miss short time.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Gloria Morgan, VP of Human Capital and Leadership Development. I pulled the report, and we have 42 people that are over the 240 hours. So we have quite a bit of staff that have not taken time off. Well, they've probably taken time off, but as they accrue time as well. So I think it would be a good policy to recommend that staff doesn't feel the pressure that I have to get my hours down to 240 or I'm going to lose them. So this way it'll roll over. But as Sylvia stated, we're still only paying out the 240 hours upon termination, resignation, or retirement.
So they can accrue 350 mm-hmm. hours. But when they separate, mm-hmm. if they separate, yes. Since we have really some long-term employees here, mm-hmm. They have to get it down to, we would not pay, we will only pay for 240.
Yes, ma'am.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
However, we think if people have those really big balances, we think that's also a management problem. Yes. We think that, you know, management needs to push mm-hmm. people out to go take vacations. Mm-hmm. My friend Jimmy Teasdale is not here today because we've told him.
He's got to start taking some leave.
Yeah, take some time. And you can't be your best here if you're not taking care of yourself too. And so this tries to accommodate, you know, and realizes that, you know, people's ability to take off at the very end of the fiscal year might not be the best timing. And it just reflects, you know, that reality. But it's also important, incumbent on managers, we've made that clear to folks. Yeah, make sure your people can take that time.
Yeah.
And Gloria, you said we have how many that are over the 240?
42.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And are you counseling with their supervisors to encourage them to start taking some time off?
I've talked to the other VPs, and the VPs are discussing it with their supervisors to make sure that they are, to start using some time.
Some have been long-term problem children in this area. Mm-hmm. They just people like to got some people who like to work, and they're here a lot. And but mm-hmm. we're working hard to push people out.
Have you wanted those extra group?
A little bit.
I don't think he's on the list.
And Sylvia.
Oh no, I take my trips.
In fact, you just set an example.
That's right. That's right. I just came back from Playa del Carmen. In fact, so yep.
We think it's a good policy, and yep. Barbara, we've checked it out from the CFO's perspective. There's no additional financial implications to the agency, and we have all of our balances fully accounted for and held in reserves.
Correct.
So we would ask for a motion to approve the change in the personnel.
Okay, so
second.
Solo moves. Carrington seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
A question for Gloria and Mike, without divulging anything, how is the search for a new HR director or whatever we're calling it now? How's that going?
Yeah. Okay.
It's a hard search because it's in fact we had a meeting yesterday with the search team at Gans and Gans. Simone Gans does a lot of recruiting. She was the one who actually helped us recruit Barbara. But the market has changed, and you know, Gloria does some things that are going to be really hard to replicate, and it's not just traditional HR things, but it's also, you know, leadership development, professional development, recruitment, it's the benefits negotiations that we've gone through. I mean, there's a lot of different skill sets here that we've been really lucky and blessed to have in Gloria for so many years. We're collecting names. There's an active national search on. We've been sending more names to her, but right now, you know, we're sort of in active recruitment. So if you know of anyone with an HR background, if anyone out there is listening, submit your name. It's a great position. That was very big shoes to fill, but we're looking for the right fit. And if it takes a little longer, that's okay because it's worth finding the right person. And
do you have a target goal for when you hope to have someone selected?
I would hope by this time next month that we would have identified someone, have interviewed some folks, and be narrowing down. We really would like that person to have some time with Gloria. Gloria's been really kind about, you know, mm-hmm. there'll be some opportunities even after she leaves in May, potentially to be able to stay connected with her and to make sure that we've, you know, passed the baton well. But but it's an issue. I will say, interestingly, our recruitment person, Simone Gann, said yesterday, recruiting people to Texas is hard. Mm-hmm. Given the environment right now, people nationally mm-hmm. It's harder to attract talent here.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Yep, that came as a
well, we know that's going on with the lenders and the syndicators.
Yeah.
But I had no idea it was going on with employers. Yeah. Hey. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that.
Thank you, Gloria.
I would also note we're going to definitely be planning some things to celebrate, you know, Gloria's remarkable career here, you know, almost 30 years, and we want to honor her. And so expect to see some invitations along those lines as well coming through at the end of May.
Thank you.
Mr. Gerber, we'd like to move over to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda.
This is tab 5. The roll has been called. We do have a quorum. Is there any public communication, Nydia? No public communication. The consent agenda is the approval of the minutes of February the 19th, 2026. Any motion to approve? Mary moves. Aye. Carl seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. The first action item is the approval of the revisions to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation bylaws. And this is the second. This is tab two. And these revisions mirror the changes that are made to the bylaws of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. So exactly. Is there a motion?
Mm-hmm. I move approval.
Second.
And Carl seconds. Any more discussion?
Mayor second. Duncan Hall and Apostola second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Resolution 00290 passes. The next is item three. And Mr. Gerber is in all of these. So as he and I talked a couple days ago, he has agreed to take all of these items. So this is item number three, and it's resolution 00289, and it is for the officers of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
And commissioners, here we're just recommending, as you see under yellow, this is again sort of the top of the table for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. Everything else underneath it, the other four subsidiaries, will all feed into AAHC. And that's why we are proposing to keep the listing of officers exactly the same for all five entities.
So we can approve this as a block?
We cannot. We have to go.
Yeah, we have to go by individual.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But staff, based on what we are hearing, believes that we'll defer to you, but this is the SLA recommendation. If someone would like to read that out as a motion, that would be great.
Okay. What? So are we moving on item three then?
So yes.
I think he wants us. You want us to read the resolution.
If you could just read out the names of
Chairperson Edwina Carrington, Vice Chairperson Mary Apostolo, Second Vice Chair Carl Ritchie.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's the current slate, and the proposed slate is in the yellow sheet.
Okay. Right. See why Mike's supposed to be handling this. Okay. So Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, the first one listed in the yellow. So Chairperson Edwina Carrington, Barbara Boetto is Vice Chair. Mary, Second Vice Chairperson. Carl, Director. Tyra, Director.
So move
your motion. Carl moves.
No. I'll second.
Question.
Yes.
Does this correspond then with resolution number 00289?
Correct.
Do we have to do both at the same time, the resolution number as well as the slate? Is that correct?
It's one and the same.
But do we have to mention both in the resolution to be passed?
It would be ideal.
Yes.
You mean the current and then the new slate?
The resolution number as well as the slate.
Okay, well, the resolution of 00289. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the slate is Edwina Carrington, Chairperson, Barbara Boetta, Second Vice Chairperson, Mary, Second Vice Chair, Carl, Director, Tyra, Director. Okay.
So moved.
Okay. Carl moves.
Second.
Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Mr. Gerber, take it away.
Well, I think this is you. This is
This is the bridge loan.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
This is the bridge loan.
All right. So this is resolution 00291, mm-hmm. and this is authorizing AAHC to execute any and all documents or take any actions necessary or desirable to take several actions here. Provide a bridge loan to Pathways at Rosewood Courts East for the development of Pathways. Three, and number two, cause the partnership to enter into a bridge loan. Three, cause AAHC and or Pathways at Rosewood Courts East to execute any such further documents that's necessary to culminate the transaction. So we have
Ann Guest,
the lawyer, and Ann.
Yes.
Who can tell us why we're doing this bridge loan.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, staff, guests. My name is Ann Gass. I'm the Director of Strategic Housing Initiatives for HACA. So, yes, the action we're requesting today is for the board to authorize a bridge loan from Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to the partnership that owns Pathways at Rosewood Courts. Construction at Rosewood has been delayed by a variety of factors, the biggest of which was the delay caused by a couple of infrastructure projects at the property. The topography at Rosewood, you've all been out there, the topography at Rosewood is very challenging. There's a lot of water that runs through there and a culvert that runs through the property, as well as some off-site sewer work that the city asked us to do. It took a lot longer than we expected. And that combined with a few other hiccups has caused us to be delayed in construction. So what that means is that we are put in a position where we're not able to extend our term on the repayment of one of the bonds. We've got several sources, and one of these bonds we can't extend past April 1st. So the problem is that the source that we had planned to use to pay off these bonds was an equity installment. We have a tax credit investor, and the tax credit investor gives us equity, and that was what was going to pay off the bonds. Well, in order to get that equity installment, we have to have temporary certificate of occupancy, the TCO. You've heard us talk about the TCO before, and we are this close to getting TCO, but we won't have the TCO in time to get the TCO, gather the paperwork together, submit it to the investor review it, and then they release the equity installment. That's going to take just that process that I just laid out is going to take about 60 days, give or take. And so with a 4-1 maturity date of these bonds, even if we got TCO today, we wouldn't have enough time. We're expecting not to get TCO until the end of the month. So we all put our heads together, our attorneys and lender and investor and everybody put their heads together to try and determine what the best way to address this issue was to not have a negative impact on the partnership or Austin Affordable or any of the other parties. And this bridge loan was our best bet. So what we're doing is Austin Affordable Housing Corporation is lending up to $4 million. It's going to be about $3.8 million to the partnerships that owns Pathways at Rosewood Courts. And the equity installment, when it does come through, in about 60 days, will be designated to pay that back immediately. So this is maybe a 90-day bridge loan from Austin Affordable to the partnership that will be paid back right away. So that's what we're asking authorization for today. There's an agenda item on the AHC agenda and then also on the Housing Authority agenda as well. I've got Bill here to answer all the other questions.
Bill, why don't you quickly introduce yourself and the role Coach Rose plays in these transactions?
Yeah, certainly. Bill Walter with Coach Rose. Good afternoon to everyone. We have been tax credit and bond counsel on this transaction. As Ann mentioned, this deal issued or tax-exempt multifamily bonds were issued for this deal so that it could generate tax credits. There was initial large issuance, and then the project discovered that it needed slightly more in tax-exempt bonds in order to make sure that it would receive tax credits on the entirety of the property. So there was an additional $4 million tranche that was issued subsequent to the initial closing. It's that small tranche here that cannot be extended past the April 1st date without triggering some other adverse tax consequences, and so it's that piece that we're seeking approval for to retire with this advance of bridge funds, which would then be repaid with the equity funds coming in the next installment.
To be clear, we get our money back first.
Yes, sir.
And we're earning interest. I asked that question. There is an interest rate attached to this bridge loan.
The applicable federal rate, which right now is about 3.59%.
Who's our equity partner on this transaction?
Enterprise.
Did we approach Enterprise about maybe helping us fill the gap?
That was raised at one point. I think Chase raised it maybe multiple times, and they have seemed reticent to advance funds prior to their completion installment coming in.
I think the good news is that we have the money to win. It really is sort of the good news.
It's an extraordinary circumstance and for sure a benefit to the property that they have such a strong sponsor who could even consider this as a possibility.
Yep. Okay. You've heard what's being asked of the board of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
So do I hear a motion to approve resolution 00291?
So move.
Carl seconds. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. And I, Bill, I'm assuming that we're ready to paper this bridge loan?
Documents have been circulated to. Enterprise is still running the traps for their formal approval on this, so this is one of the many approvals which still needs to be received to move forward, but it's heading that direction.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Ann.
Mm-hmm. So, Chairman Carrington, there is no need for an executive session, and I think we can adjourn this meeting.
Okay, so we adjourn the board meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation at 107.
I make a motion.
Carl moves.
Second.
Marion seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Commissioners will now return to the main HACA agenda.
And take up item number 5. And commissioners, this is the exact same resolution and board item that you just heard on the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda. So on resolution number 2943, and if anyone would like to entertain a motion.
So the chair will entertain a motion, recognize Commissioner Apostolo to make the motion.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Carrington. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, maybe we'll jump over to some of the subsidiaries real quick.
All right.
Some of those. So we'll start with Austin Affordable Housing Contractors, PFC. That meeting has already been called to order. There's been a certification of the quorum. There's no public comment. The consent agenda has a request for approval of the board minute summary for the board meeting held on April 3rd, 2025. Is there a motion to approve?
I so move.
Apostolo moves.
Second.
Carrington seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. The action items, again, and this will be the same for each of the subsidiaries. Action item number 2 is resolution 0007, approval of revisions to the Austin Affordable Contractors PFC certificate of formation and bylaws. We're asking for approval of bylaw changes consistent with what council has mentioned earlier. Is there a motion to approve?
So move.
Commissioner Duncan Hall moves and Commissioner Carrington seconds. All in favor, is there any further discussion?
I do have a question. Remind me, why did we create this again? The difference between this and the Austin Affordable?
I think it has to do with tax. Does it have to do with the, well, never mind. Ron, you answer.
This is the contractors PFC, so one of our gifts that we're given as a tax-exempt entity is that we are able to also exempt ourselves from sales tax. And so the contractors, we have to be the general contractor.
Okay.
And then we have we do a subprime to the real contract, to the subcontractor. So we form that entity because that, we get paid a percentage of the exemption that we're taking off the sales tax as part of our compensation to do the deal. So in order to keep everything clean and simple, every time we do that, we use the contractor's PFC subsidiary. That's why we formed that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I remember now because I remember Commissioner Bailey discussing his
yes.
career working in the comptroller's office and about the various tax exemptions. All right, thanks. I appreciate it.
So Duncan Hall moved and Carrington seconded. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. Item number 3 is resolution 0006, election of new officers for the Austin Affordable Contractors PFC. Staff is recommending a slate of Carrington as chair, Boetta as vice chair, Apostolo as second vice chair, Richie as director, and Duncan Hall as director. Is there a motion to approve?
So move.
Carrington
second.
Moves. Apostolo seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And the motion carries. There's no need for an executive session. All reports have been submitted. I think we're ready to adjourn. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Boetta moves to adjourn.
Second.
Apostola seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the ayes carry, and we are adjourned at 1:11. We'll now move to Austin Affordable PFC. The board has been called to order. A quorum has been certified. There's no public communication. On the consent agenda, we have approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on October 16th, 2025. Is there a motion to approve?
Second.
Richie moves. Apostola seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. Under action items, action item number two is resolution number 0133, approval of revisions to the Austin Affordable PFC bylaws. Is there a motion to approve the bylaws? Goeta moves to approve the bylaws. Is there a second?
Second.
Apostola seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. Action item number three is a presentation discussion and possible action regarding resolution 00132, election of new officers for Austin Affordable PFC. The staff slate is recommending Carrington as chair, Boetta as vice chair, Apostolo as second vice chair, Richie as director, and Duncan Hall as director. Is there a motion to approve?
Aye.
Apostolo moves. Second. Boetta seconds. All in favor say aye. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. There's no need for an executive session, and all reports have been submitted. We need a motion to adjourn. Apostolo moves to adjourn. Boetta seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries, and Austin Affordable PFC is adjourned at 1:12. We'll move to Equity CLT. The board has been called to order. A quorum has been certified. There's no public communication. On the consent agenda, we have approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on April 3rd, 2025. Is there a motion to approve the board minutes?
I so move.
Apostolo moves.
Second.
Carrington seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the ayes have it. The first action item is number two, resolution number 00017, approval of revisions to the Equity CLT bylaws. Is there a motion to approve? Boetta moves to approve.
Second.
Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the ayes have it. Item number three is resolution number 00015, election of new officers for the Equity CLT. Staff is again recommending the slate of Carrington as chair, Boetta as vice chair, Apostolo as second vice chair, Richie as director, and Duncan Hall as director. Is there any, is there a motion to approve?
I move.
Duncan Hall moves, Boetta seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. There's no need for an executive session. All board reports have been submitted. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Apostolo, I'm sorry, Carrington moves and Apostolo seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And Equity CLT is adjourned at 1:14. The last one we'll pick up in this round is South Congress PFC. It's already been called to order. A quorum has been certified. There's no public communication. Under the consent agenda, we have the approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on April 3rd, 2025. Is there a motion to approve?
Aye.
Carrington moves. Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the board minutes approval carries. Item number two under the action items is resolution number 00022, approving of revisions to the South Congress PFC bylaws. Is there a motion to approve?
Aye.
Duncan Hall moves. Apostolo seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. Item number three is presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution 00021, election of new officers for the South Congress PFC. Staff again is recommending Carrington as chair, Boetta as vice chair, Apostolo as second vice chair, Richie as director, and Duncan Hall as director. Is there a motion to approve?
So
Boetta moves to approve. Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. There's no need for an executive session. All reports have been submitted. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Apostolo moves to adjourn. Carrington seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the South Congress PFC is adjourned at 1:15. Why don't we get off of that merry-go-round and go to, we'll take a break.
5 minutes.
Sure. If we, of course, sure. Okay.
Yeah. The board will stand in recess until 1:21 p.m.
Exactly 5 minutes.
Okay. Recording stopped.
Good job, Mr. Gerber.
Okay. Yeah, great job. Thanks. Like an auctioneer.
Once a year.
Got another career.
Oh man, standing up.
Well, Wina, Edwina,
sir,
the ceremony honoring you was really, really nice.
And
my wife enjoyed the goodie bag that NRP put together.
Oh, good.
The brown throw. Oh, man.
I used mine last night. Maybe getting we were watching television, and I pulled mine out, and it's like, oh, this is really nice. Ate my cookie right away. But thank you for being
well,
there. Yeah, I was...
Going to have to do this every 2 years, might as well. Right, so
you've you had an outstanding career.
I appreciate it. I hope it's not over yet.
I hope not either.
I was thinking about Harrison Ford when he got that Lifetime Achievement Award a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
He said, I'm only halfway through my career. And I thought about saying that on Thursday, and I thought, nah, I'm not going to say that.
That would be ideal.
Yeah.
I mean,
you did a great job.
Yeah, Nydia did a great job.
In a rhythm.
NRP.
So, yeah. Jump in there.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So, thank you. And I appreciate your remarks, Mr. Chick. And it was fun to see Mr. Conine there.
Yeah.
I was really delighted that he and Meg came.
Yeah, he was excited to get the invitation.
What happened to the snack?
Well, that's how I asked him. I think she forgot.
Yeah, I wanted some chips. Oh, well.
I like the little gummies.
Carl, is your daughter in law school yet?
No, she is waiting for her last letter. And so she wants to go to UT, but I think she's going to get waitlisted. So she's got some other places, and I'm not sure. She may end up going to St. Mary's or either the University of North Texas, which is in Dallas. Their law school is relatively new. It's smaller. And I just told her I thought that, you know, would probably be ideal for her to have sort of the be in a small environment with a hands-on approach. I mean, I went to U of H, and... I wasn't crazy about the experience, but part of the issue with me was I was a night student, and they did not want to have a night program. Mm-hmm. So much of the so that they just did all sorts of crazy stuff. Like, so, you know, U of H is right there on I-45, and it's always construction. And they had this rule, and, you know, you're a night student, so you work.
Yeah.
And the rule was classes start exactly at 5 o'clock. And if the doors close, you cannot come in.
Can I get in?
Oh, wow. Ooh.
Wow. At the law school.
At the law school. Oh, and so the day students and the night students, I mean, you take the same classes. So the first class you always take is legal research. So the day students would always, they give them a problem. They could go to the library and figure it out in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
They gave us a problem, and it took literally 3 hours. So you get out of class at 9 o'clock. You take two classes. You finish at 9, and then you got to do your legal research.
Yeah.
And so it came to a head my second year when there was a medical doctor. I'll never forget, Dr. Charles Lucy. He walked into class. The door was closed. The professor, Professor Rothstein, told him, I'm sorry the door is closed, but you need to leave. And he kept walking, went took a seat. She said, I'm sorry, but you got to leave. And he said, I just paid my tuition. So she said, well, I don't care. He said, well, I'm paying you to teach me. That's why I'm here. And she said, you may have paid to be in this class, but I don't have to teach you, and I'm not. So she got off her stuff, walked out of the classroom. 5 minutes later, the campus security came in. you know, it's like, please, you know, you need to leave. It's like, no, you need to leave.
I was actually surprised how it
people start kind of making, you know, yeah. Oh, come on, you know, we got to work this out. You know, so he
like begging for.
So he threatened to sue the university. And so during the process of having a discussion with the dean, they realized that there was a different set of standards for the night program as opposed to the day program. And the reason was,
sorry,
so I got accepted in 1985. I had to start class June 1st, 1985. That legislative session, the university wanted to abolish the night program because they wanted to be like UT and Harvard. Well, they were brain dead because they didn't know how many, they didn't realize how many people who graduated from the night program from U of H who were in the legislature. So they said, okay, if you want to abolish it, we're just going to abolish the entire law school. So that fell to the wayside. So they had so the night program stayed, and they resented having to have a night program. So they took it out on us. We were the first class to come through, and it was they made our lives miserable until all this came to light. And then the dean went in and said, no class will start before 5:30. You got to change the policy, you know, regarding the door being closed. You know, they get in within 5 minutes or so because there's construction everywhere.
Let them in.
You know, we accepted them. They paid them money. They belong to them.
Don't penalize them because there's construction on the roads.
Does
U of H still have that night program?
They do.
Yeah,
PJs. And so, you know, it was after we got through the craziness of that, then it was fine. You know, we had a good time, and I enjoyed it. It was a good experience after that. But my first year, I mean, it was just miserable because the professors literally tried to make our lives a living hell. In fact,
make it as hard as possible.
Yeah.
Well, don't they use that sort of weed you out?
Well, no, this was different. So, okay, so I started June 1st. I have 1 day of break for the summer. So as a night program, you got to go year-round in order to graduate in 4 years.
Okay.
So there's really no break. So, okay, I'm good.
I can leave there and
get it. So, in the summer, so I'm do the fall, the summer, the fall, the spring, start summer. And so I'll never forget this. I actually got called out by the professor, Professor Ira Shepard, brilliant tax attorney. I was taking federal income tax. He looked up, he said, Mr. Ritchie. And back then, you know, bow tie, suspender, my little mock quonk pen. He said, you look like you work. I said, yes, sir, I do. He said, well, I'm not picking on you, but I'm looking at all y'all. Y'all all dressed up like you're working. And I can just tell you, if you're working, you can't pass this class. You have to spend a minimum of 12 hours on this one class. And, I mean, it was that type of, you know, so it was delivered toward the working students. And that's what had brought, that was sort of what helped put U of H on the map is it's a commuter school. But they wanted to change from being a commuter school to be able to be like U of H, UT. Yeah, and compete with UT and Harvard and these other schools. And it's like, that's not why this university was created. And so, you know, it was things like that. But once they accepted and had to say, all right, we offer a night program, we've got to treat them the same, so that they actually have a policy that the questions that they give the day students, they have to give the night students. You can't have a discrepancy.
Oh,
so if it takes an hour to solve a problem for the day program, it has to be the same way for the night program.
And how long have they had that night program ever since the law school's been there? Are they?
I think so.
Buildings come down in one day.
No.
It'll take what?
A couple of weeks.
Was that it?
Well, I'll tell you a funny story, Tyra.
Uh-oh.
Funny story. Freshman year of college, came home for spring break, and my neighbor told me, he said, for $150, I'll pay you $150 if you help me, we're going to tear down a house. We just tear it down. We don't have to worry about salvaging anything. We're going to get paid $150 a piece. We started at 8 o'clock in the morning. We started with the roof. We took up all the shingles, got everything sort of laid out, drank a six-pack of beer, and then we had a sledgehammer, and we just went to work. And we brought it down by 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Have you been to one of those destruction rooms? Have you seen those where you just like take a sledgehammer and you can like break up, you know, all sorts of things? Yeah. I haven't gone, but it sounds kind of like a real... I've been tempted when I would have a particularly stressful day, I would start dating the pins. That wasn't the chance there. What was your bowling high score? Okay. I'm a bowling. I was bowling with my daughter and her significant other about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I mean, I barely broke 100. I mean, that's terrible. I mean, I couldn't believe how awful my. I haven't bowled in like 5 years. Yeah. Shall we?
Yep.
Okay.
Where's Mary?
Where's Mary? She's over there.
All right.
Carl?
The board?
Get out in 2 years? 3 years or 4 years?
So I graduated as a 4 year. And so I think I have the distinction of probably being the only person who graduated in 4 years. Because I transferred to Vapor after my first year and a half. And I think I'm the only person who graduated in 4 years
longer
who actually took 2 years of absence from school.
Oh.
So the first time was after I finished my 4 year. Bill Hobby asked me to come work on his campaign for Lieutenant Governor. He was running for re-election. But the deal was, he was really identifying young people around the state that would help him be ready for 1990 when he was president. So it was the best time of my life.
So
Hobby had one money this evening. I mean, we had, this on the campaign.
And he had the name. He had the money and the name.
We had health insurance and dental insurance. On that political campaign. I had more money than I knew. I had never had that much money, actually that much money in my life. You know, I had all the credit cards. This is when times were really different. So because he was so close to Herb Kelleher, we had just a whole stack of tickets
for
Southwest. So they were blank. And I would just show up and just write it where I'm going. So if I'm going to Midland, I'd go to Midland, and I'd just write it in and just show up at the table.
And they were honored.
Of course.
That was the first time I heard of Clay Reed, because we had a Clay desk communication phone. I mean, long as it's everything you could have. So after that, I was full.
Sounds like good times, Carl.
So when the dean gave me the option, he wrote on my paper, he said, he will not return. So they were surprised when I came back after the campaign. Last semester of law school. I was looking like, man, this girl's got a great education. And then I get a call. Boy, Vincent got selected by Michael Dukakis to be the vice president. A friend of mine worked for Vincent. Hey, you want to come on? We were the senior president of the campaign. Hey! So I said, hey, I need one more leave. And they granted it. And they were just kind of tickled to death. So, I mean, you know, over, you know, started out in June, was over in November, showed up in the fall. I mean, in the spring and
spring and finished up.
Finished up in May, and it was perfect. I had to wear acid classes. I wanted to come in the spring.
Yeah.
So it worked out. So I took 2 leaves of acid and still worked for you.
So you started at U of H, and are you where did you?
Where'd
you
finish there?
You finished there.
Yeah.
Where'd you start?
I started.
That's right. Oh, gotcha. You were the only third. Gotcha.
All
right. Okay. Great.
We will
reconvene at 12:32.
Are we recording?
Are you done? Okay. So, commissioners, we're going to move back over to the Housing Authority of the City of Austin's board agenda. Looks like we have one more item to go. Item 6, Resolution 2944, renewal of multiple vendor contracts for landlord-tenant legal services at all Pathways Asset Management managed properties. So I'm going to turn it over to Michael Roth for this item. Michael.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Again, I'm Michael Roth, Vice President of Pathways Asset Management. What you have before you is a renewal of the contract that was initially procured in 2023 and approved by the board in September of 2023 to issue a contract for landlord-tenant legal services for all of our properties to multiple vendors. And we're requesting renewal for Troilo Law Firm and Kokonos Young at this time.
Those are consistent with the two firms we've used in the past. We had a third firm that was based in Dallas that we approved last year, but it turned out that they really didn't have the capacity to do the work, our work.
It was an additional challenge with the distance. It was costing us extra time, and that extra time is also extra money to the properties.
And, Lauren, your firm has been taking the lead, obviously, in doing a lot of this work. Of course, we do it with Arthur Troilo's firm, and we've been using Troilo. Any big things that you think that the board should be aware of in terms of just the, how we think about, these contracts? I mean, it's one of the hard parts of real estate is that, you know, we do have to take some, there are some folks who, you know, we take legal action against who do ultimately get evicted. You know, we try to minimize that because we know we're, you know, really last resort housing. But things you're saying that the board should be aware of?
I would agree with Michael that having someone local is of premier importance. All of the eviction proceedings happen at the JP court, county court. There's really no circumstance in which anyone would need to travel to anywhere outside of Travis County for these hearings. And so having someone based in Dallas and some of the JPs, particularly 4 and 5, which are very active, at least for the properties that I handle, have in-person hearings. So I think having someone who's got a local presence, I can tell you from my personal experience handling these, I see these judges all the time. I have a hearing tomorrow. And the more they see you, the more they know you. And having an active local connection to the bar really does provide a benefit that it would be hard to quantify, plus on top of having to pay for someone to drive in from Dallas or Houston or whatever, would really be a disservice, I think, to the property. It's the same as if I was trying to be like the Beaumont Housing Authority lawyer. Like, there's just no need to pay me to drive out there. I don't know the lawyers. I don't know the communities. So that I agree with that change. And I would also say that, and Troilo's great. We work really well together. But a firm that has a broad-based litigation experience, because issues come up. It's not just landlord-tenant. Sometimes it's fair housing. Sometimes it's, you know, I'm working on a voucher issue. So there's things that go all over the place, and having the ability to have a broad bench, a depth of knowledge, and be able to kind of respond quickly with competence is very important.
Let me ask you, are you active with HSDLI?
I've gone to a couple of their conferences. I have not gotten the membership yet. They've sent me a couple of invitations to do so. It's on my list to get to, but I did go to the conference last year, and I plan to go again because I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot.
So have you been to their May conference, or do you go to the one at the National NARO conference?
I went to the May conference last year in Washington, okay. D.C. So, and I'll
I'm sorry, what's the organization called?
So HDLI is the Housing Development Law Institute. So it's okay. Basically the law firms who represent housing authorities around the country. And so they, you know, at they have their own little separate conference in May, and then at the national conference, they always have like a conference in conjunction with the NARO National Conference. And I know I and a number of others will routinely go and sit in their CLE at the national conference because the topics. Like I remember the first time I got to meet Lourdes and really know her. This is when the no smoking policy was, you know, HUD was pushing that down. So in addition to lawyers, there was just a lot of executive directors in there trying to understand what the law of the land is and how can you enforce it. And especially when they came out with the marijuana, when not HUD, but states start legalizing medical use for marijuana and you've got tenants in there. And so how do you enforce that when the federal law says, or the state law says, if you've got a veteran and they've got an issue and they've been licensed and prescribed to use it, but then you got a no smoking policy, you've got this conflict. And so, you know, EDs were in there trying to figure this out. We were all talking. And so, you know, it's always a fun conference, you know, because, again, it's not just lawyers in there, but you're sitting in there talking to the EDs and working through policy issues. And then, you know, as a lawyer, I get CLE, and then just meeting the other lawyers around the country. So it was, but it was beneficial to me because when I became NARO president, we had a big issue with the ACC. You know, HUD wanted to change that. And so I found myself having to use my legal skills, having to sort of mediate between FATA and CLAFA. You know, and talking about, you know, if we go to court, how we're going to do this, because everybody, you know, CLAPA and NARO wanted to just hire one firm to represent all of our interests. FATA said, no, absolutely not. We're not going to have the same legal counsel as CLAPA. That's just kind of a non-starter. And so I'm just, you know, talking through, but, you know, knowing the legal issues, you know, and then knowing the lawyers in the various law firms, because I'm talking lawyers with other law firms, about how do we come together, because I said if we end up in a case and we're all aligned, the judge may say you only have one law firm that's going to speak to you because your interests are aligned. So that means that's 15 minutes. I'm going to listen to you for 15 minutes, and I'm going to listen to the Justice Department for 15 minutes who's representing HUD. So I felt like it was helpful, you know, to get to know folks, and you got a network of folks you can call around the country to sort of compare notes about different things that are going on. Obviously, each state has its different laws that are unique to it, but also, you know, just dealing with sort of the issues with HUD.
I think Toni Jackson is really active in that. I
she is.
Her speak. She said she's spoken several times.
Yeah, she is very active.
Commissioners, if there's no other
I agree. And I when I went, there was like the Baltimore Housing Authority, Los Angeles Housing Authority, there was Midwest Flyover State Housing Authorities, and so kind of between all of us, it's like everyone's seen everything. Everyone's seen something. And the solutions and the creative ability. So I agree. It's well worth the time. And I plan to go again. Sorry.
No worries. Commissioners, if there are any no other questions, can we entertain a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Carrie Jim moves. Apostola seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that takes care of it.
I really liked your last page. Which is a good summary of all the properties and how they've been divided up between the firms. And it's very useful, so thank you for that. Also, I get amazed by the amount of money for all of them.
I'm worth every penny.
Great. Thank you on this item. Let's go and we'll pick up these a couple of items. And I think the good news is we have a few minutes for some staff reports. So, Michael, if you don't mind. Michael Roth, I will let you come back prepared to talk about inspections and a couple other things that are happening in the pathways world. Laura will come up and talk a little bit about shortfall, and Barbara maybe can just touch a little bit on finances. We'll see how much time we have left, but we're a little ahead of schedule, which is great.
Mr. Gerber?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry. How many how many cases do you all handle? Monthly or
For just for the evictions or?
Well, just for the under this contract. Mm-hmm. So it's a variety of other things, not just evictions.
So just big picture, over the last 3 years, we've averaged across our entire portfolio about 55 evictions per year. Three-quarters of those are for non-payment of rent, which are primarily handled by property management staff. The remainders are handled by our attorneys. Now, beyond the actual cases that get to eviction, there are a number of other cases we work with our attorneys on that result in either maybe a move-out in lieu of eviction or some other type of settled agreement that is arranged between them. And I think, Lauren, you might actually have a better sense on that volume of that.
Yeah. So evictions, non-payment of rent.
Non-payment of rent. There's also behavior or conduct-based violations. So the non-payment of rent at the JP level, which is where evictions initiate, you can be represented. You don't have to be represented by counsel as an entity. So the property staff can handle those. Where I get involved for non-payment of rent is on appeal because they do need an attorney to handle it at the appellate level. You can't represent yourself as an entity there. But for the conduct-based evictions, when there's a resident who has a substantial material breach of the lease that affects the health, safety, and wellness of the community, I get involved at the ground floor. I get an eviction checklist, and Mr. Troilo has the same procedure. We get the eviction checklist from Michael Roth. We draft the notices. We appear at the JP level and handle it through appeal if necessary. A lot of it involves residents that are represented by legal aid. So it's negotiating with the lawyers on the other side to maybe it's probationary agreements, maybe it's move out in lieu of evictions. Sometimes it's knock down, drag out. We're not giving up until all appeal options are exhausted. And we're ready to do all of that. I would say I handle 1 to 2 eviction trials per month. Usually it's on the appellate side for non-payment of rent. Someone has appealed it and I have to go set them, but it's very low investment of time at that point. I've got one trial that's on a conduct base coming up in April that has been going on for the better part of a year, but that's just one.
It'd be similar numbers with Arthur Troilo. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty evenly balanced, the portfolios.
And just out of curiosity, can you share what the behavioral health issues we're seeing in that one case? Because I think it typifies some of the things we're seeing and when those issues pop up.
Do you want to do that on a public meeting?
Well, I think just in a general sense of what are some of the behavioral health issues you commonly see?
Or sure.
You might want to.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So we commonly see there can be disability-related needs. Some people have trouble with, like, executive functioning, being able to pay their rent, you know, on the same time every month, right? They forget, or that's one thing. There are also conduct-based regarding neighbor disputes. There is also sometimes residents get very upset at what they perceive to be inequities or injustices, and sometimes real or imaginary, but they take it out on staff, and they are threatening and or violent towards staff or other our vendors. And so that would be kind of the conduct. We've seen sometimes there's drug-related issues, either dealing or safe harbor type. Someone has allowed a drug dealer to kind of use their apartment as a fair number of them. I would say probably half would be drug-related, or we will see someone get arrested for a drug-related crime that happened off property, which we don't move on eviction for, but, you know, someone moves into their apartment to take care of it and continues the issue. And we want to be sensitive in those situations because there are degrees of, like, you know, are we setting this person up to fail, or, you know, or is this conduct that really deserves eviction? And so that's where I come in as counsel. is to work on a solution that's going to make the most sense. And sometimes it is eviction. This person needs to be off property. There's kids here. There's people are in danger. But sometimes it's like, let's give them a fresh start. Let's hit the reset button. Here's a new unit and a new property. And it's very case-by-case dependent. We've seen kind of like hoarding issues. Sometimes we work with them to kind of mitigate, get integral care, different resources they can get connected with. So I'm not just the axe man, I promise. Like, I really do try to work with the resident if they have a lawyer, if they have an advocate, for the best solution for the community while keeping our staff, making sure our staff know we will fight for them and for their safety as well.
Another question.
Sure.
Do you work with arbitration boards during any of these disputes or trying to resolve
it? Not arbitration. I don't believe our leases have an arbitration provision. Because it's fair housing, because it's all under HUD and there's a judicial procedure through the federal courts, but we do have grievance policies. That is kind of like an informal proceeding that if a resident receives a notice of violation or a notice of termination of their lease, they can grieve that. And that gives them like an internal due process mechanism where they go before a compliance officer that's run by kind of an independent division internally, and they hear everything. And if they don't believe that the eviction is proper or supported by evidence, they'll overturn it.
Kelly Crawford's team leads that effort. CC is now our hearing officer. Henrietta Washington has been our longtime hearing officer in that role, but they are intended to take an impartial view of the facts and to make the best decision that's compliant with policy and in the best interest of the tenant.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. That usually is the first step, but there are some cases that escalate. And we're fortunate to have Lauren and her team and Arthur Troilo and his team backstopping those efforts. Yeah, we own a lot. We operate a lot of real estate, and unfortunately, the compliance pieces of it and the unfortunately sometimes evictions is just a reality of that. But we work hard to try to mitigate that where we can, and it's the last thing that anybody wants to do. Why don't you get the last word in, and then
I was just going to say the last comment. We use Lauren and Arthur Troilo. I would say a good 50% of the time is negotiating things that don't end in eviction, if not even more than that time. Yeah. So our goal is to house if we can.
We would ask for a motion to approve resolution 2444.
I so move.
So moves. Dustin Hall seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that is the last item on the HACA agenda. So we'll now turn to the Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation agenda. The roll has been called. The quorum has been certified. There's no public communication. Under the consent agenda, there's approval of the board minutes for the board meeting that was held on April 3rd, 2025. Is there a motion to approve?
I so move.
Apostola moves, seconded by Duncan Hall. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the ayes have it. And the minutes are approved. Item number two is resolution number 0104, approval of revisions to the Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation bylaws, consistent with all the other bylaw changes that we've made today. We would ask for a motion to approve.
So moved.
Richie moves, Carrington seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. Item number three is resolution number 0103, election of new officers for Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation. The recommendation is Apostolo is chairman, Richie is vice chair, Duncan Hall is second vice chair, Carrington as a director, and Boetta as a director. Is there any, is there a motion to approve?
So move.
Richie moves to approve.
Second.
Boetta seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Aye. And the motion carries. There's no need for an executive session, and all reports have been submitted in the board book. We need a motion to adjourn. Amen. Carrington moves.
Second.
Seconded by Boetta. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And Southwest Housing Finance Corporation is adjourned at 1:50.
River, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Where are we?
Three more.
With HUD and the rebid of the contract. I mean, can I ask that?
You can. Can I come back to it after this? Great. Next item is Blueprint Housing Corporation. Blueprint Housing's annual meeting. That meeting has been called to order. A quorum has been certified. There's no public communication. On the consent agenda, we have approval of the board minutes for the board meeting held on April 3rd, 2025. Is there a motion to approve? Duncan Hall moves.
Second.
Apostola seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, and the minutes are approved. Action item number one, or which is actually item number two, is resolution 00019, approving of revisions to the Blueprint Housing Solutions bylaws, consistent with all the other bylaw changes you've heard today. Is there a motion to approve? Boetta moves to approve. Apostola seconds. All in favor. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I do. So what are we doing with this?
Blueprint, its current status?
Yeah, I mean, have we done any activities over the past year?
We have done a little bit. They continue to do some certifications for TDHCA of 811 contracts. And
when you say 811?
They do compliance checks on a particular funding tool that's used by the Texas Department of Housing. So they do some very limited checks there. It's interesting. There's an opportunity to potentially do some more work. So we've kind of it was an opportunity to try to use Blueprint was an opportunity to do some consulting for housing authorities and other partners around the country that we thought we'd need the services of Southwest Housing Compliance and to use some of the other, you know, we've got some really seasoned people here. But then the pandemic hit, and so it really kind of fizzled out. And now there's some potential to maybe revisit that and do a little bit more work. So stay tuned on that. But it does do some work, but it's low volume, less than $100,000 a year, to be sure.
My name is Barbara Chen. It's in the financial report. You can see the Blueprint Department. The so far 10 months. The revenue is about $75,800. It's still some activities, but very kind of low, yeah. Slow, yes.
So it's really, it was a visionary thing by the board to think about how can we do more and help others. But because of the pandemic, I don't think it could see its promise. So I think it's something under active discussion.
Are we still serving consultant
role for others? We do, but we during the pandemic, I think our approach was we knew some folks who were really struggling, and we just sort of helped them out of the, you know, just because we thought it was the right thing to do. You know, one entity that we are helping currently is we're helping the Kyle Housing Authority. We're actually running the Kyle Housing Authority. Michael is meet the executive director of the Kyle Housing Authority. And we're administering two properties that they have. AMP is helping us which is our property management firm that operates mostly within Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. And so they had some capacity to be the day-to-day people at the site, but we're working on all their various HUD issues and inspections and other things. That would have been a logical place for Blueprint would have been a logical place for that work to go. But because of some different reasons, we opted not to do that. It was just easier to help under the HACA blueprint and so under the HACA name. And so we see avenues to help and to do more with it. So, but there's also it's also a very saturated market. There's a lot of consultants out there, and so it's hard to sort of get an edge into that work. I'll give you an example. You have some consultancies that can actually go in and run a whole Section 8 department, like big Section 8 departments, like San Francisco's Section 8 department or Chicago's Section 8 department. So you've got lots of capacity within some of these consulting firms to do some of that kind of work. And so Blueprint's got to sort of find its niche, and we haven't quite found it.
Well, can we get a report later to be used, perhaps,
and your services?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. We can definitely do that.
Mike?
Yes, ma'am.
Blueprint's not costing us anything to have that entity.
No, though. Not at all.
And we're using the SHCC staff to provide any of those services that are needed. Is that correct? Or we're tapping other area, other employees in the authority who have that expertise?
Correct.
So I guess it's not costing anything to have this entity.
Correct. It's not. I mean, examples of some of the things we've done in the past, we did some consulting out in the Carolinas. Veronica Macon helped us with some clients out there that were needing compliance help. We didn't actually get that work, but Sylvia, Tom, what's your friend, Commissioner Carrington, Tom, the guy from...
Tom Schindel.
Tom Schindel. Yeah. When he was with us for a period of time with Blueprint, he and Sylvia and others went up to Cleveland to do some work up in at the Cleveland Housing Authority, do strategic planning work. We didn't get that contract, and we're laughing because thank God we didn't get that work because it ended up being a very large strategic planning engagement. But well, we thought about doing some strategic planning work and other things. So we've tried to sort of dip our toe into different things based on skill sets, and then just the pandemic hit, and it was just we couldn't go anywhere. So I would anticipate we'll... Okay. When they got to Cleveland, the first line out of one team member's mouth inadvertently, there was like a team of like four or five people there, said the first thing out was they were welcomed and the first comment was, "It's great to be back in Cincinnati." So that kind of set it off on not great foot, but.
Yeah, but, made reference to WKRP.
Yes, yes.
Wrong city.
But it still ended up being, it's a huge agency needing huge services, and we just weren't equipped for it at that time. If you're going to start a consultancy, you really need to have a group of consultants who are really dedicated to that work. And it's not just one, it's like a lot. And you've got to have the ability to scale up quickly, and you've got to have the ability to ramp down quickly when times are leaner. And we were really doing it where, we'd have people who would do their day jobs, and then they could do this extra work on top of it. And it just the model was flawed, and it was responding to questions that we had Commissioner Ritchie and I would go to a NARO conference. Hey, do you guys think you could help us out with this, or do you guys think you could help us out with that? And our response was, well, sure. Of course we can help, and we thought we could maybe make some money out of it. But then again, it's a combination of the pandemic and the model being not quite where it needed to be. It was not a big money maker at any. It's never been a big money maker, but it was a way to sort of use what we had then, which was really a very, very, very extensive bench, and just sort of really an embarrassment of riches. We had so many people who had so many talents, and we didn't want to lose some of those people. We wanted to hold on to those talents and use them in different ways. It's worth some discussion about figuring out, do we really want to do this, or are there better uses of people's time?
Yeah.
We do.
But where does it fit into our platform? I think that everybody's when you hire a consultant, I'll pick on Lauren. Lauren's got multiple clients. I want to feel like I'm your best client.
Lauren.
I want you to.
Her favorite.
Yeah.
First
pay of the phone. Our number one client. And that's true when you're a consultant. I mean, people have higher expectations of what you can deliver and what they can expect of you. And with the consultants that we use, we have that expectation. We want to be their number one customer, and we're demanding. It's reasonable for people to have those same expectations of us. And Blueprint was never really kind of built around that model. It's a different look from how we normally
do things and information sharing. And I think some of us feel, you know, if we're just sharing information and best practices, we should do that colleague to colleague and do that for, you know, for free. And we do that, and we do a lot of that. So we do a lot of panels, we do a lot of discussions. Sylvia is going to be leading a panel discussion at CLAFA, you know, on Friday. We're very engaged in our national association. So, and we'll come back to that in a few minutes. But yes, but more to come on Blueprint, and I think it's a bigger discussion to be had. So, okay. So, so on Blueprint, you've approved. So we still need to approve the bylaws. So Boetta moved. Duncan Hall seconded. And I'm sorry. Mary seconded.
I have Commissioner Boetta and Commissioner Apostolo, but
okay.
Maybe I'm
wrong. Yeah, Boetta okay. And Apostolo.
Yes.
Okay, and is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. Last item is number 3, which is resolution number 00018, election of new officers for Blueprint Housing Solutions. And staff is again recommending Apostolo as chair, Richie as vice chair, Duncan Hall as second vice chair, Carrington as director, and Boetta as director. Is there any is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Carrington moves, Boetta seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. And there's no need for an executive session, and board reports have been submitted. We need a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Carrington moves, Richie seconds. And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And Blueprint Housing Solutions is adjourned at 2:02. We'll now turn to Austin Pathways. It's been called to order. Quorum's been certified. There's no public comment. On the consent agenda, it's approval of the board minutes for the board meeting held on April 3rd, 2025. Is there a motion to approve? Carrington moves to approve. Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. Action item number 2 is resolution number 00015, approving the revisions to the Austin Pathways bylaws consistent with other bylaw changes that we've made today. Is there a motion to approve?
Aye.
Carrington moves, Boetta seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. Item number 3 is resolution number 00014, election of new officers for the Austin Pathways. The recommendation is for Duncan Hall to serve as chair, Apostolo to serve as vice chair, Boetta to serve as second vice chair, Carrington as a director, and Richie as a director. Richie moves. Apostolo seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. There's no need for an executive session, and all reports have been submitted. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So
Richie moves, seconded by Boetta. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And Pathways is adjourned at 2:04. Last one. Pathways Asset Management Incorporated's annual meeting has been called to order. A quorum has been certified. There's no public communication. On the consent agenda is approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on April 3rd, 2025. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Apostolo moves. Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The minutes are approved. We go to item number 2, which is resolution 0017. Approving revisions of the Pathways Asset Management, Inc. bylaws consistent with the bylaws that we have changed already today. Is there a motion to approve? Boetta moves. Apostolo seconds. And is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries. Last resolution is item number three, resolution number 00016, election of new officers for Pathways Asset Management, PAMI. And we are recommending Duncan Hall as chair, Apostolo as vice chair, Boetta as second vice chair, Carrington as director, and Richie as director. Is there a motion to approve?
So
Carrington moves, Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, and it passes. There's no need for an executive session, and the reports have been submitted. Is there a motion to adjourn? Carrington moves. Apostolo seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And Pathways Asset Management is adjourned at 2:05. We got that one last one done in 1 minute. That's great. Okay. There's no need for an executive, so we'll go back to the main HACA agenda. That remains the last one that is open. All the there's no need for an executive session today.
Wait, what about these three down here?
Oh, those are just, yeah. So during my report, we'll take that one up first. You'll notice at the bottom of your list there are three committees that we've had to varying degrees of sort of functionality. The board has operated sort of as a as a whole for as a committee of the whole for most of its work during my tenure here. But Commissioner Duncan Hall and Commissioner Carrington have been kind enough to serve as head of the evaluation committee for many years. There's no need. Luckily, there's no need for an evaluation this year, so we'll take that up next year. So it's a light lift. The Budget and Audit Committee probably should.
Hold on. Commissioner Duncan Hall and Commissioner Carrington told me at the last evaluation they really, really wanted me to
pass this on.
So
welcome aboard, Commissioner.
So I've agreed to take it on, and I would recommend Commissioner Boetta also serve on the evaluation committee,
great,
as well as Commissioner Apostolo.
We only can take two.
Okay. Barbara.
Okay. Okay, so the.
I tell you what, why don't we do this? I'll take Commissioner Apostolo because Commissioner Apollo is going to be on the Budget and Audit Committee.
Okay. Everybody in agreement on that? It's a light lift this year because there's no evaluation this year. So, okay, on the budget. On the Budget and Audit Committee, which may see some action this year, Commissioner Carrington is chair. And Commissioner Boetta is serving as vice chair. Everybody comfortable with that? Okay. And the Program Review Committee, Commissioner Duncan Hall is chair, Commissioner Apostolo is vice chair. What we've generally done is, we've made it an open call to folks to come at like 10:30 in the morning, but it's been a while since we've done that. But we probably should think about reinvigorating that work. And any commissioner can come. The trick is we have to then make it a public meeting. We hit quorum but we can accommodate that. We can just have a public committee meeting of the Program Review Committee. So, but right now we'll put Duncan Hall and Commissioner Apostolo as vice chair, if that's okay with everybody, and then we'll go from there. Does that sound fair? Okay.
Because a lot of the issues that we're dealing with really dealt with Austin Pathways.
Yep. So obviously we have a new member. Welcome again. Wasn't that fun going around, Robin? As I shared with Commissioner Boetta last week, when she visited with all the staff, this board meets this way because you all want it to meet this way. You're nice enough to invite staff to come sit at the table. It's a very collegial structure. It wasn't always that way, but you all have chosen to conduct it that way. There's nothing set in stone. You all get to decide what the practices are of this committee. If you've seen things in other experiences that you want to change and have worked differently, and a new board member is an opportunity to change those things and to get the benefit of your perspective and wisdom as well. So, you're a fully appointed, duly sworn commissioner. In fact, you're swearing it. Your oath might even be better than some people's because. Because I think Nydia administered an oath or two. everyone's on is commissioned, and so that can be changed, and so and we can rework things. There's nothing magical about the annual meeting, but this gives us some predictability, so we're grateful for that. I did want to mention under the president's report just a couple of quick items, and I'll ask Michael to come back up. We have a bunch of inspections that are coming up. And we've historically done wonderfully well in the inspections of, we're used to, 80s, high 80s, 90s, in those inspections. But we're getting ready to have a real run of inspections coming up. And so I wanted to make sure you were apprised of that. It's confirmation of how well we think things are going, but it's also very challenging on staff. And it's worth, I think, just highlighting that to the board.
Sure. So good afternoon again, commissioners. We have In the entire PBRA portfolio, project-based rental assistance portfolio, there are 13 inspections that are due this year. As a matter of fact, a couple of them were actually due last year and are past due, so we know those will likely happen. One inspection happened actually this morning at Pathways at Goodrich Place, which is managed by our third-party partner, Carlton Living. And by all accounts, we'll be scoring somewhere around a 97 or thereabouts, so that the property did very, very well in that inspection this morning. This was an Inspire inspection for that property.
So this is the new inspection protocol.
Correct. Correct. So all of the inspections I'm going to talk about today are the new protocol that HUD has put in place. TDHCA uses the same protocol. We've had several of our properties go through that inspection, both with HUD and TDHCA, and been doing very, very well with it so far. We have three inspections coming up in April, two on April 28th, one on April 29th, and then we have three more inspections coming up on May 12th. So we have six already scheduled, plus one this morning, and as I mentioned, there are six other properties that are due for HUD inspection, physical inspection, before the end of the calendar year, including the two that were past due from last year. So the timeliness, we don't get really a choice on that. There's a HUD schedules, and the contractor schedules it. We are allowed to reject the first date they offer, but then we have to take the second date they offer, which is usually the very next day. So you might, there's not much point in rejecting unless there's a really valid reason not to do it on the day that they propose. The way the scheduling works, at any property scoring a 90 or above, it's 3 years before they come back. Any property scoring in the 80s, they'll come back in 2 years. Below an 80, they'll come back next year.
Are most of ours always 90 and above?
Currently, all of our properties' most recent inspection is 90 or above, every single one of our properties.
What exactly are you looking for or inspecting? Not just the property, but each unit?
Correct. So the change to the new standard shifted the focus from curb appeal to livability. Where do residents live? So inside resident apartments, inside the common areas and amenities are now carry much more points and much more value in the inspection than the curb appeal and the physical exterior.
Do they just randomly choose units to inspect, or do they inspect all of them?
It's a random selection based on the size of the property. The smallest random selection is at least 17 units, so a property with 33 units like Menchaca Village, 17 of the 33 will get inspected. But when you get to our largest property, Booker T. Washington, has 216 units, has an inspection total of 31 units gets randomly selected. You don't know about the selection until the morning of the inspection.
And they do unit size, buildings?
Correct. It's random throughout the property, yeah. Okay. Correct.
Is it just physical inspections, or are they also looking for compliance, making sure everyone's got their income certified or anything like that?
That's a separate round of inspections that we have. The physical inspections, the National Inspire stands for National Standards for Physical Inspections of Real Estate. And so that is all about just the physical conditions of the property and the units and the buildings and the structures. And this really focused on resident safety, which greatly appreciate the shift. You know, the time and energy and money that we put into some of these things, we want to make sure it's actually going to something that's meaningful in the lives of our residents.
Do the tenants have to give our inspectors permission to go into the units?
We are required to give them notice that we are coming into the units. This is part of the lease and the regulations that they do have to allow us access if we give proper notice. So, for example, the inspection that they had this morning, all 120 units of the property received notice that we might enter, but only 26 of them actually were entered for the inspection.
And how far ahead is that notice given?
We're required to give at least 48 hours notice, and we usually give significantly more than that. We give them notice a good month before. Once we know inspection's coming, our residents know the inspection's coming, and then we'll give the formal notice usually about the 72-hour mark.
To the whole property.
Correct.
And we actually try to work with the resident council as well to try to make sure they're aware of it. And you know, we've had resident council members who have like been out there with, you know, mops and, you know, helping us to
get the dishes washed.
It's really yeah.
Run the vacuum cleaner.
And it's, you know, it's really, you know, it's funny. One of my favorite memories here is when the first inspections that we had, and I had been on board, and you know, it was very nerve wracking. Everybody was kind of running around, and you know, because you're trying to do your best, and but you know, I remember I worked with a couple of the maintenance guys. We painted a playground set. You know, painted some play equipment at Chalmers Courts. That of course has all now been torn down. You know, I mean, everybody was out there doing something, and it was really nice. I mean, it's team building. It's not team building when it's one after another after another after another for weeks on end. And this is a little unique. There's a real run here between now and the end of May. So
correct.
That's, you know, we want to make sure you're all aware. Yeah, it's a challenging time in PAMI.
If they go into a unit that fails because of housekeeping, then what happens?
So with the HUD inspections, there is no housekeeping component to it. It is really about, is the electrical working? Are the appliances working? The heating and cooling working? Is the plumbing working? Are there leaks? If there's children's toys all over the floor, or if it's dirty or messy, that's not a deficiency that gets called out in the inspection. However,
we call it out during housekeeping.
We call it out. But where it does impact potentially the actual physical inspection is infestation. Because a unit that is not clean is much more prone to having, whether it's roaches or some other type of infestation, and that could be a potential deficiency that we could call them. Correct. Yeah, the inspections work. You start out at 100, and everything they call out is a deduction.
You don't work up to it.
You don't work up to it. You work down from 100. UPCS is the previous protocol standard that was used by HUD. It was standard for Uniform Physical Condition Standard. That really focused on the curb appeal and the look of the property, whereas the shift to Inspire focuses now more on the resident safety and health and safety.
Yeah. And you'll continue to hear about UPCS in other contexts. It's a, you know, we've now migrated to Inspire. There's also one that's kind of really more of a lighter touch inspection called HQS, Housing Quality Standards, and that's the protocol used by Section 8 and all the voucher programs. So we have inspectors going out, and that's really a very light touch inspection to make sure that it's just really meeting the minimum of safe, decent, and affordable, safe and decent under that protocol. UPCS is much more rigorous, and Inspire is rigorous, but sort of changing the focus again off the curb appeal and, you know, was there a piece of glass in the, you know, on the, you know, in the middle, you know, on the playground, to, you know, really looking at sort of less gotcha kinds of things around sort of the livability.
Correct. Yeah.
And we can, if anyone's interested, it's an interesting thing. They've got little nifty manuals. It's interesting to actually go around with an inspector and sort of see the things they're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. Anything else?
Just someone mentioned files and everything. We do have two HUD, what's called management occupancy reviews, where they will be coming and actually looking at our files and looking at all that aspect of the program requirements coming up in April as well, or April 30th and May 1st for two of our properties.
Great, thanks.
Good luck.
Laura, you want to come for just a quick second and just give a quick update on voucher programs and shortfall? And deep, more detailed reports are on the in the very back of the book. So, and we can provide individual reports to folks who have more questions.
Hello, everyone. Hello, commissioners. My name is Laura Bodai, Vice President of the Assisted Housing Department. A quick update on shortfall. If you all recollect, we were put into a HUD-designated shortfall last year, April of 25. Which we immediately put in a number of restrictions, which are still in place. One of them being, of course, no issuing of new regular housing choice vouchers. And then also we don't absorb portability, people that come into our jurisdiction. We now bill the other PHAs, among other things. So when we first looked at the shortfall numbers using that HUD to your tool that I've presented to y'all before, we were around the $7 million mark. Those restrictions, we were able to pull it back, so we ended the year with about 3.5
million, if you remember, and we got those shortfall funds from HUD, so it made us whole with that. So using that same two-year tool for the projected 2026, we're looking about the same. It's about 3.5 per the tool's prediction on those. This is taking into account the project-based vouchers that we have committed that are set to come online this year in 26. So we take those into account. And, of course, there are some increments, some programs that are still flowing vouchers, the VASH program, the Foster Youth of Independence, some unification program vouchers also. And I'd be happy to dive into any part of that that interests y'all. Yeah.
I think there's hundreds and hundreds of agencies around the country that are dealing right now with shortfall. And you know, the perverse thing about our shortfall is that with getting those additional dollars, you know, we had a $7 million shortfall. We got about $3.5 million. So now our new baseline moves up. So next year we'll have $3.5 million. But we're still a little bit behind because of the commitments we've made to our homeless neighbors. It's the right thing to do. We're going to ride that out for a little bit as we kind of go up and seesaw a little bit with our funding. But our ultimate baseline goes up, which is good. And Barbara is helping to watch that really, really closely. And so there's an opportunity to build the program, but yeah, it's a little bit more scrutiny from HUD than we like. But
it's regular meetings, right? So we do have the last meeting we had with the shortfall prevention team, they call it, which is interesting because it's after you hit shortfall, there's no prevention. But we had the last meeting with them in October with the idea that we would have, well, they predicted that we would have the next meeting with them in February. We're still waiting for that meeting to hit the calendar. But there will be another meeting, and we'll look at the numbers with HUD and kind of see where we end at the end of that meeting also.
We call it the shortfall survive and thrive.
I know.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Laura.
Of course, thank you.
Barbara, anything on budget that you'd want to highlight for the board? Why don't you come on up and use the mic? As Barbara's coming up, I would mention that our auditing firm, Berman Hopkins, has now merged with another firm. Do you know the name of it? Yeah. So Brian Nemeroff has left the firm, but Sean Cedar and Laura Ann Prey will continue to be our audit partners. Sean's now an audit partner, and they really were doing the work. As you know, Brian stepped out when we were doing the rent program with the city of Austin. And so because of the conflict there, he went off and helped us with that piece of it. Commissioner Boyd, we worked with the city. We administered the city's rental eviction prevention program during the pandemic. So we moved about $80 million worth of rental assistance through here to about 6,000 people, which was great. It came in like four different installments, but we partnered with Berman Hopkins to serve as the fiscal agent to cut all the checks, and they did a great job. But because they were our auditor, we wanted to make a separation of partners, and so Brian was sort of spun off at that point from us. But Laura Ann and Sean will continue to be working with us, and we'll send you more details about the new firm. But it's a big firm. Berman Hopkins is about a 100-person firm, and the new firm is about a 1,000-person firm. So it's they got swallowed up.
It's one of the top 50.
Did they merge with Comresnick?
No. This is the one in. Oh, you have.
Dorain Mayhew out of Chicago, I think.
In Michigan.
Oh, Detroit.
In Detroit, Michigan.
Yep. But you'll see them in the new year, or you'll see them in the new fiscal year. Anything you want to highlight?
Budget. Good afternoon. My name is Barbara Chen. We don't talk about 2027's budget, or we don't talk about this month's report.
Either. If there's any highlights that you want to share
okay,
with the board,
when Commissioner Barbara, that day we did last Friday, we did a presentation. I'm from budget. I'm going to take very quick. I remember.
Nothing has changed since last Friday?
Nothing changed since last Friday.
There's no money in the bank since last Friday.
No. So. Yeah, we do. We do have a few million dollars. So from the 27th budget, the board approved it at about $881.3 million, and among that $881.3 million, about $820 million are voucher payment, housing assistance payment from the our second aid programs and SHCC all together. So that leaves a little bit over $60 million for operation and about a little bit $10.5 million for surplus. So that's what all I remember in my head. So our annual operating expenses, the operating expenses for agency-wise, including everything, is including all those eight property we managed and the PBIA red property altogether is about $60 million a year. So as you, if you recall, we have about 74 million dollars, 73 for the non PBI program, plus this $3 million surplus cash surplus. So overall, we have about right now it's about $76 million we have. So that is good for 16-18 months for the to cover our operating expenses, even if we are not going to receive any. Spend any money, no revenue from tenants, from the all the grant or the HUD. So pay for our operating expenses. And the plus, and we always I kind of when I do it that it's unrestricted cash, but Mike and I always talk about it about $10 to $15 million. We designate it's unrestricted, but it's pretty much for our capital improvement of our development. So that's part of the reason we can make a temporary loan to Rosewood, the $4 million. So that's all kind of that's how we do it, we manage it. So that's from the budget and that's from our reserve. Anything else you want to have a question?
I think when you did the budget, when we did the budget this year, we did budget for 12 months.
Yes. Correct. We change it.
But there are some big expenses coming, and just to give you all a heads up, so you know, if you look in the board book, you know, you'll see a very generous reserve right now of about $73-74 million. Mm-hmm. You know, we're anticipating, you know, 8 to 10 on the completion of this building of the renovation here.
It's not covered by anything else.
No, that'll be out of Hyde. And we're anticipating, you know, of course, the reserve will continue to increase a bit as from just money flowing into it, money from fees and other things. But we are going to have some big hits to the reserve this year. So the $8 to $10 million on the renovation of this building, at least $10 to $15 million, I'm thinking, on Santa Rita Courts, if we can figure out a way to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Ron and I are having a conversation in about an hour with Carlton about that very issue and trying to work through issues there. The city is really tightening, you know, the funds that they're providing to these programs and initiatives. Even though we've got great support on city council and in the city manager's office, there's not going to be an affordable housing bond this year, and so most likely. And so, you know, there's just not the pot that's there as generous as it was in the past. So things to, you know, keep in mind, you know, Prop Q has really impacted and I think unnerved folks about going forward with more requests for bonds and, you know, understandably so. And so, we'll just have to keep watching those waters. That's not a decision for this board or for me, but it is just something to watch because, you know, those dollars were critical for Rosewood Courts. The city put in about $10 million for Rosewood, and I'm not sure how that was the first time we really took money from them. And then
9.5,
and then Santa Rita is, you know, we're probably looking at, you know, probably a total of 20 by the time we're done. And realistic
Santa Rita and Rosewood.
So, but realistically, that's probably not going to happen. So then we'll have to step up for that gap. So big draws coming on the reserve. Things we've budgeted for. It's kind of like that commercial, you know, when the person goes to see their financial advisor, and it's like, you know, I'm really anxious about all the, you know, costs I'm seeing, and they say, well, we've been planning for this, and we have, we've been planning for this. So, just so folks know what's coming as we work through it. Anything else, Barbara? Great.
No, we have money. Yes.
We're in a good spot.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me mention a couple of things as Sylvia and I prepare to go to CLAFA. I'm so glad that Sylvia is going to be leading a panel.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
What's CLAFA? I have it on my questions.
Oh, I'm sorry. So there are three industry associations. One is the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials, or NARO, N-A-H-R-O. That's the one we've been most active in, and the chairman has served as actually president of NARO, and in a sick, twisted way, I was actually the interim chief of CEO for about a year. At the same time, I was here as president and CEO of HACA. So what a year that was. My wife will never forget it. So we've been very active in NARO. We've been generally an almost all NARO agency. We've used it for training and other and networking and relationship building. Then there is something called the Public Housing Authority Directors Association, or FADA, P-H-A-D-A. We're not very involved with them, but they have the best write-up. They have the best, their team does the best write-up of sort of news you need to know. So we all read the FADA Advocate. And occasionally we'll share something with the board. The last organization is CLAPHA, C-L-P-H-A, the Council of Large Public Housing Authorities. And that's kind of the NARO is sort of the group for everybody, and it's the whole community. It's 22,000 housers and community development officials. FADA is just the executive directors. They do some very interesting training work, but it's really just limited to the EDs. And then CLAPHA is, in a lot of ways, I don't want to call it the club, but it's kind of it's the smaller contingent of the very big agencies. Yeah, so it's like the top 150 agencies by size. Yep. And we're small among the large. So we're probably like, 125. Out of the 3,200 public housing authorities around the country, I think we're like the 125th largest. I mean, we're small among the large. But we really punch well above our weight. I serve on the board of that organization. They're actually going to hold a conference here in the fall. Their fall conference is going to be in Austin. There's a lot of respect for Austin within that group, and they are dealing with some of the bigger challenges that Michael Roth has been serving on on an immigration panel there for quite some time, and that's been really helpful. But it's been a very useful organization, and they partner. They all partner. In the fall. We don't have a firm date yet.
They actually did the last housing conference. CLAPHA did it. It was here, and it was in March, like the week before the pandemic closed everything down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And who was the longtime executive director of CLAPHA was in Austin. Mm-hmm.
For Travis County for many years ago, yeah. So there's a lot of ties, and it's all, you will all come to know the names of these. But those are the three big associations. The reason I mention it, though, is because at CLAPHA, we're going to be talking about two rules that I want to highlight to you all today. One is the continued work on mixed status families. And Michael, you want to come back up again? We continue to focus intensively on our mixed status families. We have how many now? And do you have the definition of mixed status?
Sure. Mixed status families are families where some of the household members have legal status in the country and some of the household members do not have legal status in the country. So currently among our 1,500 project-based rental assistance units, apartments, families, we have 44 mixed status families. And then, Laura, in the voucher program, I think there's about 36 in the voucher program at this point in time.
And that's out of our 6,000 families in the voucher program and out of our
1,500, we have 44. Yeah.
So we're working very actively with those families. Anything by way of update on the – want to talk about the mixed status rule that's been proposed? And, I mean, it's a tough rule, yeah. and it will hurt our families.
So before we go there,
because, the title and the rule is mixed family status, right?
Correct.
But it's my understanding that everybody who we house are in compliance, 100%.
We're in compliance with the rules as HUD has outlined them to date. That is correct.
Okay.
The proposed rule is to change the rule.
Right.
So the current rule, just for clarity, says that anyone who does not have legal status in the country does not receive subsidy. So there's a calculation that is done in the rent calculation that if whatever portion of the family, whatever percent, 50%, 25%, whatever that is, does not have legal status, whatever subsidy the family would have received, that percentage of the subsidy they don't get, and the family has to pay that additional portion out of pocket. Okay. And so the proposed rule that is out right now for public comment would change that to say that if a family does not have 100% of their household being legal status, they are not eligible. The entire family is not eligible for subsidy.
Is that of adults in the household?
Of all members of the household, irregardless of age.
Even underage?
Yes. Yeah. So what would happen for our current families, if this rule were to go into effect, would be that within 60, we'd have to give them notice, and then they would have 60 days to cure the situation. Either the person moves out or gains some type of legal status. If they are not able to do that, there would be a termination of assistance. That is not eviction. It just means that the entire family would no longer be eligible for any subsidy, and they would be paying contract rent from that point forward. There is the option to request extensions of time to be able to find other affordable housing. The current proposed rule says they could request a six-month extension, renewable twice, so a total of 18 months of potential extension before the termination of assistance goes into effect.
Is there other affordable housing for these people?
Tax credits and other things of that nature. We just had two families in particular from one of our properties who moved out, and they moved into a low-income housing tax credit property because they found a 30% unit that they could afford.
It does, yep. Absolutely.
It's one option.
It's one option.
But in terms of the number of families that we have, is that considered
low?
Very low. Okay, so that other cities would be impacted much more heavily than we would.
It is. We're hearing from colleagues. It's a massive problem. I've heard from LA, I've heard from Seattle, I've heard from
Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Where else are you? I mean, but there are people who are very panicked about what this means, and the fact that these names are easily accessible by ICE, which is we were told don't worry about that when we entered names into the system for generations, and now it's clear that they're linking up with ICE in some communities. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, we have to provide information about every person in our household, including declaring that they do not have eligible status. Earlier this year, the Secretary of HUD announced a partnership with the Department of Homeland Security to share information. So we know the information sharing is occurring.
It's happening. So. And it's not appropriate for this board to have, an opinion with respect to, ICE enforcement. We've for management to have an opinion about ICE enforcement. We have advised. Resident leaders that that our ability to assist and support is limited, and we've encouraged folks to be aware of what their legal rights are and to seek understanding of those rights now. But the housing authority has very limited options in this space, and we've instructed staff to comply with working with with law enforcement authorities and as they submit provide us with. Subpoenas or other things that or warrants, and so I know that may be painful for some folks to hear, but that's how we've generally approached it. But we have.
What about these three organizations? Are they taking any type of position on this proposal?
The organizations are submitting comments. They are submitting comments and about the workability of them and about concerns about how this changes the business model and people in need. And so, I think you'll see in future coming weeks as some of that comes out, Michael and I will share with you and Sylvia will share with you what those comments are. But our industry associations are sending very strongly worded, letters of concern about what, what, you know, what this means for communities.
And to whom are they submitting these concerns?
They're being submitted to HUD, and no doubt they'll be submitted as well to members of Congress as well.
And HUD is, you're thinking HUD will be approving this proposal?
Well, we don't know. I mean, they're obligated under the Administrative Procedures Act to listen to public comment and to respond to inform public comment, but we're not sure how they'll process it. We hope that they'll take some time to really reflect, which actually, so immigration is one issue, and extended families is one issue. Let me migrate to an issue that I think is a little more positive, if I can, and that is they are.
In all due respect. Mike has kind of painted this in a very nice way. I think that issue is going to be, there's not going to be any wiggle room. The administration, so there's a guy named Ben Hobbs, who Mike has had the pleasure of visiting with at CLAFA, and that I met at the NARO conference. And as it relates to immigration, there is simply no wiggle room. That's coming down from the White House. So they are going to enforce it with every thing that they have. So we just need to make the best out of it, but it is going to happen.
It will become immediately enforced.
I mean, once the rule is passed, it will be, and I'll just be honest with you to show you how contentious this is. So when the secretary actually spoke at HUD, at the NARO conference last week in D.C. And when he was speaking, people did not like what he was saying. It was the first time I'd ever been to a NARO conference in my 29 years of going to a NARO conference, with the exception of when Mayor Giuliani spoke in New York. And ACORN came and they demonstrated, but that was ACORN, that wasn't NARO. But NARO members actually went and were making comments. It was very somewhat disruptive.
No booing?
There was booing.
It was booing and jeering.
And it was booing, jeering, and then a couple of people started walking out, and then because I'm sitting on the front row, I couldn't see it because there's 1,000 people in the room. I'm told about 100 people at one time got up and just walked out. So there are a lot of folks in the industry who are opposed to this rule, others who said, hey, you know, law is law. We got to enforce it. But they made very clear that they are going to enforce it once it comes out, because that the immigration part of this is coming out the White House, and either you fall in line or you don't have a job the next day. So I don't. Mike kind of, I don't mean, he didn't say
I need
it
the
wrong.
Job the next day.
He didn't say it wrong, but he didn't sort of say it with.
It sounds to me pretty ominous.
Yeah,
it's
but no,
a,
no.
It's a worrisome thing.
It's coming.
Yeah,
it's coming. So I just want you to know it's going to happen. And, you know, all we can do is just, you know, enforce the law as we're told the law comes down.
And this information sharing, which is not really information sharing, voluntarily, that is happening in every single state, every single city, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, ICE has
forced to share this information, knowing how it's going to be used.
Well, and we should share it. I mean, if in previous times, you know, if you're receiving a federal subsidy passed through us, mm-hmm. you know, the Fed should know, you know, we're serving, you know, the mom and we're serving two kids. But, oh, by the way, grandma lives in the household and, you know, is helping with the family, but she's not of legal status. You know, so we're not paying subsidy on grandma, but we are paying subsidy on the other three. Mm-hmm. It keeps that family together because grandma can live there and help with the kids.
And in most cases, grandma is paying more in rent than the family who is legal next door. So for housing authorities, I mean, it has provided additional revenue, but it was sort of the trade-off. I mean, you're not legal, but you can stay here, but you're going to pay a premium to do so. And so.
Well, what you just said was where I wanted to go with this. I mean, so right now, what is our policy? What is HUD's policy? And how do we implement that? And do we do it on all of our RAD properties? Is it our former public housing?
and property. Sort of, what's the rule now, and who does it apply to?
So the shortcut on the rule is there has to be at least one person with legal status in the household. Doesn't matter if head of household or the newborn or whoever it is. Does not matter. At least one person has to have legal status, and that's what we've been implementing for decades. And that's been followed across the industry for decades.
And that makes them eligible for subsidy.
Subsidy, yeah. And eligible to be able to move in.
Okay.
Any sort of legal status or, like, naturalized?
Any sort of legal status. It doesn't have to be a citizenship. It can be a legal permanent resident. Legal immigration status in the country. So just
prorated.
Correct. And just to do really simple math on that, if contract rent is $1,000 and the family's portion is $400, that means there's $600 of subsidy. If half of the household does not have legal status, then instead of getting $600 subsidy, they only get $300. And the family would pay the other $300 out of pocket.
So stepping to something that's maybe a little more positive coming out of HUD, the administration has proposed work requirements on a voluntary nature, and they've proposed something called the Work and Dignity Coalition, which I think Sylvia and I are going to learn a lot this week when we're in Washington, and we'll hear from the secretary who's speaking on Thursday morning, and it'll be interesting to see that conversation, and then Secretary Hobbs will be there. So there was a lot of thought that HUD might come in and just simply impose work requirements and term limits, time limits on participation in the programs. But to Secretary Hobbs's credit, they indicated that they realized also they were going to they'd face more lawsuits, and HUD is facing a lot of lawsuits these days from other agencies around the country. Over the executive orders and some of those types of things. They put out a proposal that actually has voluntary work requirements and gives flexibility to PHAs to create some incentives within their programs to try to get people back to work. And the idea is that able-bodied people ages 18 through 61, if they're not engaged in school or they're not doing other, meaningful things that, are helping within community, should be finding work in a program of job training and skills training and back to work. And I'm not sure that there's an initial reluctance to, what's the fine print. But the more we dig into it, the more we're finding that, there might be some value to that. And us being a leadership agency in that space might not be a bad thing. We have seniors who are aging in place. We have people with cognitive and profound physical disabilities who will never be able to work as we have, as we see it. But there's almost everybody who, can move a little bit more towards independence and self-sufficiency. And the hard part of it is that we're never going to see all the resources we need to clear our wait list. So unless we help people to get off of these programs, we don't make room for another neighbor in need. And so it's worth thinking about. And so I just want to be very upfront that we're talking about that, internally, with our senior leadership team. We want to learn a lot more about this coalition and what's kind of coming together and seeing how our industry groups support it. But I think there's been general praise for the idea that, okay, this is voluntary. They're letting agencies create some incentives and innovate a little bit around, what those programs can look like. And we have a really good track record around job training with Jobs Plus and around our partnerships that we have with EGBI and with SkillPoint, Goodwill and with the Workforce Boards as Workforce Solutions and ACC and many others. And so SkillPoint Alliance. And so I think there's, a number of reasons that, there may be some benefit to being, an early and adopter, but so more to come on that. But I want to give you, let you know that's something that we're thinking quite a bit about.
So let me just say this. That part, I think that, to me, that's the easy part, conceptually. The hard part is going to be for you all, the staff, because what I'd like to do, hopefully you all have been meticulously recording and documenting everything. Because what I like to do is have us identify how many of our residents are in the business incubator so we can have that ongoing, and that should be part of our reports going forward. So we will know how many of our families are going through this, and I'm not sure if you were familiar with it. Okay. So that we'll...
Oh, yes.
Okay. So that we'll always know how many people we have, how many residents we're going through, where we can talk about success stories, whether it's somebody who went out and went through the program and they set up a flower shop or they have a new barbecue place, et cetera, whatever the stories are. But I think we need to document how many people have gone through it who are residents here, you know, what are the success stories. Same thing with Job Plus. Going back to the shopping center, how many of our residents have been hired? Because the whole reason Jim got me to vote for that was because he came and said, we can play the role of the godfather. We can basically, we can tell the merchants, we won't raise your rent. You hire a resident, tell us what skill sets they need. We'll send them to ACC, get them the training. You hire them. And so I'd like for us to have that because, I mean, to me, we have – yeah, as I listen to folks talk in Washington, a lot of our colleagues, they were moaning and groaning. I'm thinking, on this part, we've been doing this. I mean, it's just like the folks from HUD had just showed up, and they're just like, okay, I got this directive. I got to make sure. But we've been working on this for a very long time. I mean, ever since I've been here, our whole focus has been trying to create for those. I think the way I looked at it was 50% of our residents are under 18 years of age. So, you know, some of them can work some of jobs, but for the most part, they can't. When you call them out, you call out the seniors either because of age or disability, then that group in the middle, we've always tried to focus on what sort of the skill sets we can help them so we can help them get from public housing, Section 8, first-time homeowners, home buyers program. We've always worked on this. I mean, we don't talk about it. We hadn't had to. But this has always been part of our DNA because we've always said we want to have somebody else who's on the wait list be able to come next, you know, as we move somebody out. So to me, this is sort of, as Mike said, this is the easy part. We just don't talk about it in terms of those terms because we hadn't had anybody to just show up and say, oh, this is the new directive. Well, it's not new to us. It's always been what we've been. It's always been part of our mission. So what I'd like for us to do is just sort of document it so we can have it so the next time you got somebody from HUD showing up and they just say, what about work requirements? Well, okay, this is what we've been doing. Where have you been? Because as a matter of fact, there's a young lady with the secretary's office who's coming to Austin in May and said she would make a point to come and visit us. So, after the speech, people were somewhat kind of, you know, taken back. But I went and invited the secretary. I said, come to the Austin Housing Authority. We'd love to show you what we're doing, you know. I mean, the immigration issue, we'll have to work through that best way we can. The other part, whether it's term limits or, job requirements, I mean, we're fine. We can work through that. The term limits, you know, obviously if they give us some flexibility. You know, for some people, they do need to have a goal. Others, there's a time frame to sort of work with them to get them to progress. That should happen. But I think we all feel like that somebody who wakes up every morning, who has a job to go to, that means they got a purpose in life. They've got something to aspire to. Mm-hmm. Because people don't want to wake up and just say, I want to go live in public housing. People don't aspire to be here. They end up here because of some life situation. And what we try to do is make life the best they can live while they're here. But, you know, we all want them to do the best they can and move on so we can help the next family. So that part of it is not foreign to us. It's just we hadn't had to talk about it in those terms. I mean, when we talk about, you know, Ron's portfolio and moving our Section 8 residents, we're doing that. But we don't talk about it in those terms. So I don't want us to feel like, hey, look, this is something new. It's hard because it's what we've been doing. We just hadn't had to talk about it in such stark, hard context.
No, I agree. This is in our wheelhouse.
Yeah.
This is what we've done for many, many years.
Yeah, Mary.
Oh, no, I was just going to throw in IMOMs. There have been one or two that have become registered nurses, several CNAs, and, you know, just on and on. So with that IMOMs program, that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I mean, because that's why I said the hard part is going to be for you all to go catalog all this. I mean, you think about our residents who go through and they graduate and go to ACC, they get a job, they go through the self-sufficiency. So I know y'all have the data. It's just pulling it together. And between Jorge and AI, I know y'all will be able to pull it together. Sorry about that. I thought he was over there.
Jorge changed into FundMe. Yeah. Does everyone know FundMe? FundMe's our...
No.
FundMe, introduce yourself real quick.
I'm FundMe. I work with TMI. I'm very technical.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to me, we've been doing it. It's just a matter of pulling together the data, the stories, and our new national president, Sean Gilbert, he's big on storytelling. And we've just got a great, we got great stories to tell. Because we've been doing, I mean, like you said, this is part of our wheelhouse. So
absolutely. And a good thing we've upgraded our software system on the resident services side. So the Avricot software should be able to help us kind of gather that data that you're speaking of. Yeah.
Well, we're a couple of minutes before 3 o'clock. I would maybe add just one last tidbit for to a high note to end on. Housing of the City of Austin.
Let me make one more comment. So on that, but once we get the data together, we're able to tell, put the story together. I think we want to share that with the mayor because the mayor goes to the U.S. Conference of Mayors. He goes to the League of Cities so that when he's out there, when that comes up, he could talk about what his housing authority's done. I mean, that was the one thing I remember Steve Adler saying is that when he went – that was the first thing he would lead with. And we want to make sure Mayor Watson is on with that. And I think we also want to put that in the give that to our state, local delegation, our state reps, and our state senators. So that, because that conversation is going to play out at the Capitol. You know, and again, when people are being, yes, we got to do this, like, okay, we've been doing it. Where have you been?
A lot of work ahead. It's going to be a really busy year. So I would like to let you all know that we received several awards at the upcoming that will be given to us at the upcoming Texas NARO conference, Dents in Corpus Christi. We got the best annual report for a large housing authority. We got the best newsletter. We got the best media recognition, but I'm not sure what the media recognition was. What
on Rosewood
or one of the two. And then we actually have the management person of the year for a large public housing authority, Stefan Lambor, who is an unsung hero back in Jimmy Teasdale's shop. He does a lot of our management over inspections and does a lot of planning and development pieces and makes a lot of... Stefan Lambor. You'd remember him if you saw him. He's a tall guy and really bright and just, you know, he's been here a long time. But he's
French.
He's French, yeah. Yeah, so he's a great guy. So we're really happy for him, and he'll be awarded his Management Person of the Year at the upcoming conference in Corpus. Management. Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm trying to speak louder. I even brought this thing right up to me.
You're trying.
I'm trying. Yes, ma'am. It was an evaluation issue. I remember those. So the conference is March 26th. Is that week? So not next week, but the week after.
Which conference?
It is next week. Texas NARO. And I think, Mary, you expressed an interest in going. If you're interested, I will say we're not expecting a lot of attendance at all. So just being realistic, I will probably go down there for a day, and if I'm lucky, I'll drive back home that same day. But I would like to be down there for Stefan's award. So. Anyway, but anyone who would like to go.
I was going to ask about Barbara.
It's probably not the one to go to. No.
Not
on such short notice. Yeah. I think there's probably, there will be upcoming conferences that will be happening at the national level that I think we'd love to get. And if folks would like to go and are able to travel, we'd love to have you come.
Well, I think you ought to tell her about, I mean, give her the calendar of the conference because you've got So with NARO, you've got a regional conference. So the Southwest region we're in, they got a conference coming up in, I think, June. And then the NARO summer conference is going to be in Nashville. I'm not going, but it's in July. And then the national conference will be, I think, either September or October, but it's going to be in Denver. Yep. And those are always fun to go to. I mean, you can learn a lot, but you also get a chance to meet folks from around the country, other commissioners.
Yeah.
CLAFA here will be really nice because I think we can get everybody there, and we'll probably want to host an event or two. And then Denver for NARO would be great. So those two conferences will give you the most bang for your buck in terms of, you know, understanding about what's sort of current issues, you know, that are facing folks. The difference between NARO and CLAFA that I think is really helpful is that CLAFA tends to have a power day, one day of sitting there for 8 in the morning until, you know, 5, and everybody stays in the same room and they cover everything, which is nice. It's also a long day. NARO is more spaced out based on interest with lots and lots of concurrent sessions, and so, you know, there's an HR track, and there's a Section 8 track, and there's a, you know, a public housing operations track, and everything that, you know, that folks need. So it stretches out over over more days, and those are big conferences. CLAF is a little smaller, probably 300-400 people, 200-300 people, whereas NARO's can be. I mean, I think you'll probably have 1,500 people, 2,000 people at Denver. So. Anyway, thanks for the thing. We'll give you all a calendar of all the dates of upcoming conferences. Thank you. Thanks for spending time with us this afternoon. Congratulations again. And yeah. Anything you'd want to say? We put you on the spot.
I again, I just thank the staff for Friday and my orientation. I went through this whole book this weekend, and I appreciate everyone's just taking the time to visit with me and the patients as I get up to speed.
We're so excited to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
We're adjourned?
We have a motion. Edwin has a question.
Oh, I don't have a question. I have a thank you. And I have a thank you to Mike, Carl, and Nidia. To those of you all who showed up on Thursday, as Mike can tell you, I was very apprehensive. I really didn't want, this. I really didn't. but it's a beautiful property, and I'm honored, and I'm just so honored, and I appreciate those of you all who showed up. There was lots of wine left over, so I'm not sure you all drank very much, but anyway, and I want to thank you, and Mike, thank you, because you really kept after me, and I appreciate that. Yeah. Carl had wonderful remarks, and it just made me I would come that night, and there was no way I could go to sleep. Laid in bed, thought about everybody who showed up, and of course, I think you must have told the staff it was a command performance.
No, they really want to go.
You got to show up over there. But anyway, I just thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
It was a lovely event.
Lovely event. Yeah. It was lovely.
Yeah. And well deserved.
We thought you were leaving, so that's why we named it out. You're having so much fun, you decided to stay.
You want me to revisit that?
No, ma'am. We need you right where you are.
I am leaving. I'm going to be gone. Kumi has a 2.5-minute demo video that she's going to play for everybody while we're leaving.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh,
okay. The demo.
The demolition.
You need a motion to adjourn?
Yeah, before. Let me get a motion to adjourn. Second. This motion by Wiener Carrington, seconded by Mary Apostolo. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we are officially adjourned at 3:04 p.m. on Tuesday, March 3:04. 3:04 p.m. on March 17th.